Welcome to Total Network Operations, the project with a podcast that's dedicated to hardworking network operators like you who deliver all the packets. Here on TNOPS, we give operators and technology providers a chance to talk about their great ideas in NetOps so you can make informed decisions for your network and your team and to spur more constructive and direct dialogue between those tech vendors and NetOps teams. I'm your host, Scott Robon. Today, we have a sponsored episode with Aviz Networks with Vishal Shukla, co-founder and CEO of Aviz Networks. Vishal and Aviz are making networks for AI and AI for networks. And we're going to get into how Aviz does this, the role they play in open networking, and the criticality of open networking for AI for networking. Now, on open networking, you may have heard of it or heard about it a while back and wonder what's the latest on it. Open networking, sometimes called disaggregated networking, is an approach to networking that disaggregates the network operating system from the networking hardware. To contrast this with conventional routers and switches, we say those traditional platforms are shrink-wrapped. The NOS and the hardware come bundled together. You can't buy them separately. They're tightly integrated, like Mac OS's on my MacBook here. Taking an open or disaggregated approach allows you as a NetOps shop to have more choice in network operating systems and forwarding platforms, aka white boxes. You might even be able to save money with open networking. This approach has been popular with many hyperscalers, where they have the software smarts to write their own NOSes and purchase white box platforms in large quantities. It's a growing trend in enterprise and government networks, where there are increasing options for forwarding platforms and operating systems. Some of them are open, some are not. SONiC, the software for open networking in the cloud operating system, is the most widely known open source NOS, and Aviz plays a key role in the SONiC community. Let me not steal any more thunder from Vishal and just say, Vishal, it's great to have you here today. Tell us about yourself, your history, and what led you to found Aviz Networks.
Yes, thank you, Scott, for having me here. You know, I'll start with a quick introduction about myself, and then I will pair it with on how Aviz come into being while I was working on those things, right? So I started my career as a network R&D engineer back in 2004. Some of the, you know, the first of the jobs which I did was essentially around Cisco, you know, IPsec SPA module, hardware accelerator for the security and IPsec tunneling, right? And,
which everybody loves today, of course.
Yeah, I mean, and the good thing about that job was that I got to learn the, you know, the encryption of the data plane,
sure,
as well as the control plane. So all the protocols which Cat6K supported, 10,000s of them, how do you put them inside a tunnel, encrypted and everything. So that's where I started my career. Then, you know, in Silicon Valley, you have a lot of startups. Got back to Cisco again, then Nortel Networks, and then Blade Networks, which got acquired by IBM. So I was in IBM for around 5 years. And at that point of time, I transitioned from the hardware-based networking to software-defined networking. Matter of fact, we're the first one who created a software-defined controller. You know, so Misira was there, which became NSX, and then that was there. So till 2016, I was, you know, leading the engineering organizations. A lot of innovation, a lot of books were written in that era. But in 2016, I changed into product management and overlay sales at Mellanox.
Okay.
And essentially taking care of, you know, Spectrum X outbound product management,
okay,
with disaggregated NOS vendors, like,
sure,
you mentioned.
So you have some good insight into how that's been integrated into NVIDIA, I'm
exactly
sure.
Exactly. Yep. And then I was there essentially doing the product management as well as overlay sales for the disaggregated networking.
Okay.
With these proprietary network operating systems, and there were a bunch of them, right? From 2010 to 2020 was a decade of defining this disaggregated, yep, NOS and everything.
For sure.
But, you know, meeting 1,000+ customers across the world, what I realized is that it is still proprietary, right? And while at the other side, what was happening in parallel is that Microsoft kind of big companies, they were redefining this disaggregation with open source, which is SONiC.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to a point where in this tier two, which are not Microsoft, but still big enough kind of companies,
right,
they started asking that, look, why can't we use this particular open source?
Sure.
Right?
And let's make a quick distinction there, right? Open networking and disaggregated networking are not the same, like you just called out, and I stumbled upon it a little bit in the intro.
Yeah.
Open networking is using real open source software,
yeah,
for routing and switching. you can have disaggregated networking with proprietary operating systems. Very good.
Right? Yeah. So we thought of basically create. So now, but what is the problem, right? So I used to ask these customers, okay, what? So support is one problem, orchestration and the operations, and then how do you disaggregate data out of the infrastructure? These are the real problems. So and hyperscalers have solved it, by the way. I mean, you know, creating the stack of their own. So our idea was that how do we create a stack which is is ready to consume by these tier twos and give them the same benefits of choices, control, and standardization, and all of that comes with significant cost savings. So that's where the idea of Avis Network started. And by the way, what we started with, that Sonic is the next thing. If you look at the Gartner hype cycles, between 2022 and 23, they did a major change in their hype cycle. In 2022, you will see open networking mentioned in their hype cycle. In 2023, open networking got swapped by Sonic. Hmm. So they don't mention open networking. For them, Sonic is the open networking, and it's essentially that's the standard for open networking.
It's certainly got a lot of momentum. I 3 years ago, you know, I saw it just relegated to hyperscaler data center, you know, level layer three data center designs, but it's getting more and more features and creeping outside the data center environment for
That's
sure.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And we are actually helping that by being in community, working with all the vendors as well as customers. Our idea is to enable as many as use cases on top of Sonic, and the architecture helps to do it.
Sure.
The pull from the hyperscalers make sure that vendor has a reason to do it. So we are leading the charge to make sure that Sonic has all the features which it is missing, other than edge and Rocky and data center.
Right. It's also telling when the traditional network element vendors announce support for Sonic. And like, just because I want to use what I know is publicly announced, Nokia has announced support for Sonic.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are other public announcements. Do you know of any for sure? You don't have to make endorsements or anything.
So look, I'll tell you this, right? Without naming anyone,
sure.
I think that the first operating system which is getting ported on any ASIC today is Sonic.
Right.
And the reason is not because Sonic is great or whatever. It's basically the hyperscalers are using it. And any new ASIC, the first customer for that are hyperscalers.
Right.
Right. So essentially you quote Sonic first because that's what they're going to use. And by the virtue of it, you get the maximum runway on any ASIC is with Sonic operating system. And basically hyperscalers kind of beat it to perfection. That's how it works.
So can you comment at all on, you know, Azure took this approach and made Sonic open.
Yeah.
And other hyperscalers have done they've either acquired operating systems and kept them fairly internal or developed their own and not opened it up to anyone else. What advantages has that given Sonic and maybe, platforms that use Sonic compared to the other more closed approaches?
First of all, you should look at the Sonic, the chair committee.
Right.
You have Google in there, you have Meta in there, apart from Microsoft, right? So there's a reason why they're there, mm-hmm. right? Their data centers are as big as, Microsoft. Sure. So I cannot comment on where they use it because that information is not public. I also don't know. But definitely that's one of the biggest interests with all the hyperscalers we have. If you look at China, Alibaba, Baidu, Tencent, they sure. use a version of Sonic,
right?
So essentially, the biggest users of networking are going towards this Sonic and Sonic capable ASICs, mm-hmm. which actually gives the reason for the vendors to make sure that Sonic is supported on their on their ASIC, on their switches, right? So to answer your question, to have these big guys coming openly, either declared that they are using Sonic or they are openly in the community of Sonic with their logos and everything in, makes ecosystem which is very, very sticky. Now, I want to take a pause and want to give you a thought process. Look at the open source, which happened in past 15 years, right? The open source, which tend to stick, are mostly, developed by the consumers.
Sure.
And think about it. Kubernetes developed mm-hmm. by your biggest consumer of Google. And right. then, they have the pull. They are the biggest user and they are making sure it stays.
Right.
And it is staying. You think about Kafka.
Mm-hmm.
Was developed by LinkedIn.
Yep.
They are using it and it makes sure it stays.
Sure.
Right.
They have vested interest in making sure those open source projects stay alive and healthy.
Yeah. The problem is if a vendor makes open source, that basically most of the time gets a victim of competition. Then, oh, that open source is not good. Mine open source is good. But open source developed by the dominant consumer will stay. And that's what Sonic is, essentially. So that's not going to go away anywhere unless all the 7 or 8 hyperscalers decide that they're not going to use Sonic.
And we can't predict the future. Who knows what could happen? But today, it just seems up and to the right.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I mean, it's going to follow the Linux path. I mean, it has crossed the critical milestone where there is no going back on this.
So what is your role in support for Community Sonic?
Yeah. So, look, I mean, there are multiple ways Sonic can be consumed, right? I mean, one is proprietary Sonic. And when I was founding this company, Cumulus was great. Right. There's no problem.
Before it was acquired.
Yeah. Before it was acquired, it was great. But the problem is it was proprietary. Right. I'll give you one example. I was sitting with a customer outside of United States, and it was open networking, used to call it open networking. And the customer said, oh, so this is all open. I said, yeah, it's all open. And think about I was selling, the solution. And the customer, just turned his laptop towards me. He says, OK, show me the source code. Right. And I was like, it's Linux. I says, no. Show me the actual source code where this mapping is happening with the SDK and everything. Right. And he said, then don't call it open, please. Right.
Right.
And that kind of made sure that when we were making this company, that whatever we do, whatever we support, we need to be able to provide the source code to the customers. Right.
Right.
Now, when you make this kind of a statement,
sure,
it's a big, big undertaking on the engineering side. But look, that's where the startups are made. I mean, if it is simple, then everyone will do it,
right?
So we started with this single thing, is that whatever we will do will not make a distro, right? It has to be community. It has to be open source. And then the stack has to be as good as what hyperscalers have made.
Sure.
And then the disaggregation has to be taken at a different level, wherein we will disaggregate the data.
Right.
Not the NOS, because customers don't buy NOS, they buy a switch.
That's right. They want a system that works. Solution, correct. Right? Yep.
Now, data is required because networking is a place where you can get pretty much all the data of use for security purposes, for compliance purposes and everything. Right. Mm-hmm. So you basically disaggregate the data on the network control plane as well as on the application control plane,
sure,
and then put AI on top of it. Now, when we started, we didn't know how we were going to do AI. We had the thought, but then 2022-23 LLMs came in, and that's a perfect answer, again, in a community way. Don't make proprietary algorithms for simple jobs. I mean, the LLMs are good enough. Every day we are seeing it's getting better and better.
Right.
So basically provide customers the solution, which is as much as community open source oriented. And then basically provide them what they really need. So now coming back to what do we provide to our customers?
Right.
We provide 4 things. Standardization, by the virtue of it, they have a lot of choices on the hardware. That gives the control of negotiation of different. And negotiation is not always about prices. It's also about how fast you can deliver.
Sure. Supply chain issues are huge today.
Yep. Right? And then the end of the day, cost saving happens. So when we talk to customers on the value that we provide, some customers start that, oh, look, I want to start with the standardization and end up in cost saving.
Mm-hmm.
But some customers say we want cost savings, and that is achieved by standardization.
Sure.
Right? The idea is pretty simple. We provide an OEM-grade experience while enabling, all the choices in ASICs and switches, provide orchestration, provide observability, provide packet brokering, service nodes, pretty much the whole end-to-end network software stack,
sure,
which is required to make a network and run a network.
Right.
That's what we provide.
In terms of that facilitating choice amongst forwarding platforms, early there was a lot of dependence on Broadcom chipsets. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that broaden to outside of the Broadcom family? What's the state of my real choice for alternative forwarding hardware?
Well, see, this is where I was saying that because this technology has been developed by a dominant buyer.
Sure.
Right? Which kind of gives space for, making space for, non-dominant seller as well.
Right. Sure.
Right. So that's what it is. So essentially, Sai, which makes everything standard, is actually open source. It's a community Sai, right?
Right.
Yes, of course, there are
the SAI.
SDK abstraction interface, right? There are proprietary size as well, and which will always be, and which is fine, right? But the community size supports those 20% of features which 80% of customers need.
Right.
Right. Now, yeah, there will always be use cases like if you go media and entertainment, you know, all the special latency specific PTP time sensitive, those kind of things, and then service provider like sure. MPLS, SRv6.
Right.
These kind of things will always be there. And slowly it's getting turned out, but what 80% of the customer needs is already available with pretty much all different ASIC vendors in the world. And we do have customers, actually not just one, around 15 plus customers are a different spectrum, big customers, medium customers, or small sure. customers, right? Who basically have more than one switch vendor,
right?
More than one ASIC vendor.
Okay.
Just because they can make one Sonic build across
right
across their different ASIC. And by the way, if you look at any ASIC vendor messaging nowadays, or even the switch vendor, the big ones, right, they talk about open, they talk about multi-vendor is a way to go.
Sure.
Post-COVID that has become a norm, right? So this mantra of multi-vendor is not hidden. Like the cat is already out of the bag,
right?
Right. And yep. that you can see from the messaging from these all vendors. So it's a phenomena,
right? Right? And the evolution in that ecosystem has been pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago, you know, again, the more traditional network equipment vendors could really differentiate yeah. through their silicon, but you see this, you know, this the system outside that with Broadcom, with Marvell, with Cavium and others, right? That's and fascinating to watch. And we'll have some of those white box vendors on future episodes. So I don't mean to pin you on with all that forwarding plane discussion.
Most of them are our partners.
Sure.
And they are our partners.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, not because, we are, you know, the superhuman company or whatever it is. It's a demand from customers.
Sure.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a business to be won. And the customer problem to be solved,
mm-hmm.
right? And the next generation of networks to be made. So right thing always happens. And that's the testament of all the partners we have is why this is happening.
That's right. Yeah, it's been fascinating to watch for sure. To go back to when you were talking about services that you provide your customers, you know, we should have the security conversation,
yeah.
right? With CVEs, pCert announcements, how do you manage that for Sonic? Tell me more about your process there.
Yeah, so there are two different dimensions on doing this. The first one is actually acknowledging it and fixing it
right.
In the code. And the second one is actually providing it to customers. So let me take an example of the last one, which happened recently, this OpenSSL
mm-hmm.
Issue, which happened, I think, in July 2024. Right. So we did the analysis. By the way, so first of all, we did the analysis number of pCert supported, done by, the traditional NOS and switch vendors versus Sonic community. So if you do the analysis, it's 3x of the pCerts were fixed in Sonic community
okay.
as compared to any other great OEM provided. And we have the data. I mean, if anybody listening and wants to kind of ask about this data,
sure.
ping me, I can provide that data. So right. that's number one, right? Number two is how fast it can be fixed, right? So 1st July, that particular CVE was reported. I see the pCert OEM vendors when they fixed it. It's somewhere around September, October timeframe, mm-hmm. around August, September, around 2.5 months.
Sure.
3 months, right? And then I looked at Sonic community. That issue was fixed in July end. And the beauty of Sonic is that it's a microservices-based architecture.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially open source. So I like to call this term, and with all due respect to the product management people around the world, and including Avis product managers, is that Sonic gives you the ability of bypassing your product management in from the release cycle perspective.
Sure.
Right? So you are sensitive about that fix. It got fixed on 26th of July. Take that a PR
mm-hmm.
and basically just upgrade Sonic. You don't need to have a big flashy release or a pCert announcement and everything. And I think because of that reason, OEMs takes time because they have to go through 10 different hoops and everything.
Right.
But Sonic is community. I mean, you know, you just need to have a good system for regression testing, which I always provide, by the way, one of the things which I didn't talk. So basically, I would say 70 to 80% faster is what community fixes these kind of issues. And then if it is not fixed, then of course we take care at Avis and we provide the tested build very fast.
Sure. And like, is it fair to draw analogies between what you provide for Sonic in terms of fix implementation, regression testing, to basically Red Hat and Linux? Is that a fair comparison?
Yes, yes. That's one part of our business, right? When we talk networks for AI, then definitely you can equate us to it. The only difference is Red Hat created a proprietary Linux. We have kind of graduated into a world where open source is way more popular as compared to when Red Hat made their first version. Nobody knew open source at that point of time, but in 2025, you know, everyone knows open source. So right. You can't really just do open source and put a wrapper around it and say, hey, it's my proprietary.
Right.
So it's about taking. Right. Yeah.
Well, the last item on the security front, even though we could talk a lot more about what's happening there, from a proactive perspective, we're even seeing Community Sonic go through the NIST FIPS 140-3 certification process.
Yeah.
And that hit my radar in late 2024,
yeah,
where now large government organizations are actually issuing RFIs,
yeah,
for disaggregated switching solutions.
Yes.
And that's how I got engaged with you all last year, yes, in terms of responding to that RFI.
So. Yeah, yeah. So this is like a, you know, these are certain small milestones, which kind of proves that your journey, which you are on, is right. So this is
for sure
one of the milestone, and you know, government joining this bandwagon kind of you know, it's a big milestone.
Yep.
Right. So we'll do our best to make sure you know, that this milestone is taken care. Now you know, it happens or not, that's another thing. But you know, the one of the thing is that you do the right thing, and right thing comes around.
Right.
That's how it works.
Right. And those government networks are typically not on the leading edge. They always wait and see what happens in the rest of industry first. But when it does happen, it means there's real interest. Like,
that's
can,
right.
I, can I put this into production?
Yes. So, and there is another thing, you know, there's customers. By the way, I mean, I just want to tell you from field. So we do this whole analysis, the ROI, the TCO analysis for sure, customers and everything, while proving that technology is good. There were some customers who asked me that, okay, yeah, I'm going to save a lot. I'm going to have a long-term ROI, no doubt about it.
Right.
But what about the risk I'm going to take? Right?
We would have gotten there, but thank you. Thank you for introducing the topic. Yeah, what about the risk?
What about
Vishal?
The risk? And my first answer comes is, what about the status quo, the risk about risk of your status quo? Right? How long are you going to be on the status quo side? So that's kind of a very emotional, salesy kind of argument. Mm-hmm. But let me give you the data.
Okay.
And again, you can reach out to me, the people who are listening to it, for the source of this data, because it's a podcast. I can't show the pictures and everything.
Any links you want to point people to, we'll make sure we get it in the show notes, right? Make it easy for people. Yeah.
So there was a study done on 180,000 switches across 130 geographies for 3 months.
Okay.
Essentially, you know, the reason of failure of those switches, right? Now, when they did the analysis and everything, 18% of the time, the failure was actually software. And then the rest of the reasons were platform,
sure,
transceivers, maintenance window went bad,
yep,
power went down, those kind of issues,
sure,
right? So first of all, to the folks who say that, you know, Sonic is a risk and Sonic is a software, so the blast radius of that risk is 18%. And that's coming from a very statistical,
sure,
data.
A database observation. Data. Sure.
Second part of that study was that take a switch, run Sonic on it, and then on the same switch, run the vendor NOS,
right,
on that switch.
Yep.
By the way, that NOS which belongs to that switch vendor, right?
Right.
Within that 18% time of the failure from software, Sonic was more than 1% probabilistic, mm-hmm, better as compared to the vendor NOS itself.
Okay.
And you see, I mean, this is a very, I mean, when I read it, and I come from all the vendors, sure, you know, my XBS.
Yeah, no, we read the list earlier. Yeah.
So I mean, it was very surprising. And I thought about it, that why Sonic is better, even though it's kind of a community open source versus the same vendor network operating system. So a couple of things, right? Community is big, right? So they have more developers as compared to any vendor which can put on one DOS. The second one, which is very important one, the architecture is right. It is, so let's say, I mean, if somebody wants to use data center protocols, they just use data center protocol. They will not care about PIM or MPLS or
right.
SRv6, right?
Yeah.
And those things can be off. You don't need that code. It makes it more simpler,
yep.
more leaner, right? And less prone to failure.
Just comment that out of the code, right?
Yeah. Right? But if you look at the traditional way of network operating systems, it's a monolithic code. You get pretty much everything.
Sure.
You want it or not want it. Of course, you will not see the CLI until you put the license, but the code is there.
Sure.
Right. So that's one of the technology reason is why it is. And I use that data study to actually talk to customer on a technology level,
sure.
a statistical level. And of course, there is dollar level involved from the T4 sure. ROI and everything. So yeah, I mean, that's what it is. And if you look at this crossing the chasm methodology,
right,
it's already crossed in my opinion.
Totally agree. Right. From external observation, without a horse in the game here.
Yeah.
I think I just mixed metaphors there, but that's fine. Yes. Let's make sure. So you've hinted at the differences between networking for AI and AI for networking. You know, in the 10 plus minutes that we have left, let's yeah. pivot to that. What's the difference? That's two very different things that lots of people get confused about. But how do you distinguish between them, and tell me what Avis does in both of those areas?
Yeah. So look, I mean, when you think about networking, right? So first of all, you have to make networks. Right. And today, if you have to make networks, one of the driver of changing your network, refreshing your network is essentially you are adding a different kind of a compute, which is GPU as compared to CPU.
Right.
Or you are adding inferencing in your network, or your applications are demanding more bandwidth. So you're going to be upgrading your speed.
Right? Sure.
Whatever you say, it's basically the data and the AI is a key driver for refreshing or changing or increasing your networks, right?
Beefing up your network infrastructure.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the first dimension, networks for AI.
Yeah.
And what it means is that you should look at network switches and even network operating system as just infrastructure.
Right.
Right. And you should be able to choose and control and do the budget spikes kind of normalization without thinking about how you're going to manage it, how you're going to orchestrate it,
sure.
and how you're going to do that. So Networks for AI is essentially giving customers a standardization, choices, control, and cost savings so that they can choose the choice of their ASIC, choice of their switch, choice of their DPU, a choice of their fabric management software. If they have their homegrown,
right.
they should be able to just use that, right?
Yep.
So, and choice of CPU. So essentially a software stack which can have customer enable for using any infrastructure underneath and get a OEM grade experience.
And for important contrast here, InfiniBand is not open, not in any way.
Yeah.
And like we know it's solved incredible problems and great work has been done with it for a very long time, but it doesn't benefit from any of the constructs that we've talked about for Sonic for the episode here.
Yeah, but look, I mean, to our point from Networks for AI, this is a GTC week.
Right.
We just announced a Spectrum X as part of our, the whole Networks for AI vertical.
Right.
And when I say infrastructure, you see Sonic is a great way, but then customers can choose any other network operating system in Spectrum X. It is Cumulus.
Right.
Right. And Spectrum has its performance benefits across any other thing out there. So customers should be able to use a Spectrum X in a north, south, east, west, or they can use east, west Spectrum X and they can put non-Spectrum on their north, south. The operating plane will be same, which means orchestration, observability, rule alert system, network SLA support, everything provided by us. So that's the first dimension, networks for AI, which we help customers with.
Gotcha.
The second dimension is AI for networks. Now you have customers who basically have networks already deployed,
mm-hmm.
right? And they want to introduce AI as an AI assistant in multiple different ways, boring, mundane use cases, which can actually help a network engineer to do their job better.
By the way,
I'm not talking about troubleshooting only. That's part of it.
Yeah, to go take us through use cases or things that you've seen that have been very useful to customers.
Yeah, so look, I mean, if you look at the life of a network architect or a network operator, you know, so basically, 30 to 40% of their time actually goes in, firefighting, operating this and troubleshooting.
Feels like more, but sure.
Yeah. But then there are cases like maintaining compliance.
Right.
Right. Doing security audit reports. Looking at the customers' websites and all the vendors' websites and everything, finding out the PCERT advisories, creating the upgrade plan, then maintaining the systems which does upgrade, right? Then if a bug happens, go back in service Jira now and all these kind of things, right? Figure out what bugs are sitting in your network. So I think the starting point of AI in networks is not something intrusive. And I like to give an analogy here. Think of Tesla, right? How did they introduce AI, right? The first thing they introduce in AI is to stay in your lane and do the cruise control.
Yep, lane assist and keep the right distance from the car in front of me.
By the way, I mean, cars had that 10 years back.
Keep
the same distance, right? And radar-based lane keeping assist was there.
Right.
They had the technology. They didn't, given it because customers had to trust on it. And then they came up with the change lane and, red signal and green signal, all these kind of things, right? So customers have to trust network engineers have to trust AI. So where it should start is that where, first of all, the network engineers and architect think that their time is not valued, spent not much of a value.
Right.
So things like generating documents, doing audit reports, configuration management, doing capacity planning, right? Looking at internet and finding out what is the upgrade path and everything, right? That's where it will start, exactly same as the Tesla lane assist and everything.
Right? That's a great analogy, by the way. Yeah.
And then it will go into doing some things which are a little bit intrusive, right? So by the way, I mean, that's what our vision is. Now, how to get there is, first of all, you need to be able to create a disaggregation of data from the network control plane so it can understand all the protocols, flows, traffic, congestion, buffer management, PFC, Rocky, it can understand all that. That's number one.
So you're like streaming telemetry to some repository.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. That's number one. The second one is something like your network visibility, observability kind of a thing. So which things like Gigamon kind of companies does, they look at the data and find out which application it is running, specific granular per use case. So like
more than route level information.
I mean, it's the application.
Yeah.
You get the packet.
Yep.
And then you keep on looking whatever deep you want to go in.
Right.
Right.
As much as you can with encryption. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And by the way, encryption is also, you need to have the capability that you can decrypt and then look into it.
Right.
Right. So that's also part of that. Right. The idea is that you need to understand your network and you need to understand what's going inside your network. Mm-hmm. Once you have these two understandings, you can stream it and make a data lake.
Right.
By the way, all the OEM out there, they have some sort of data lake.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
The difference between our approach and in any other approach is that it's vendor agnostic. You see, the whole stack is vendor agnostic. Mm-hmm. Right. So the network telemetry as well as the data telemetry, this will be vendor agnostic. And by the way, for this data application data telemetry, you don't need Sonic because, it sits on top of existing network, which sniffs, looks inside the packet, do the service notes and everything. And once you have this, then you basically train LLM and start putting the agent per use case. Mm-hmm. So agents are like, upgrading is one agent, checking the website for essentially making upgrade path for you. That's one.
Right.
Then supporting, if you are a cloud service provider or helping customers outside, supporting your customer answering their level one, level two tickets is another use case. And by the way, all of it based on the community LLM, we are an open source company. So essentially, we want to leverage community as much. And the idea is not just to not make proprietary, but also leverage the advancement which is happening in the LLM space. Every month, there is a new LLM.
Every week.
Yeah.
Right.
Twice the speed, half the power.
Right.
That's the norm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we want to leverage that. And we believe that, AI networks will not need any proprietary platform or anything like that. What will be required is essentially a way to get the data to the LLM and then the agents.
Right.
And it has to go to a point that customers can write their own agent. And that's where we want to go towards, is essentially to make sure that they can tie up their own existing automation and everything in that.
So can you give us a view of, like, you have vision, and you're very well versed in open source everything. Where are you along your release and tool availability?
So whatever I said, ping me and we can do a POC for you.
Okay, great. That is a good, easy answer. Yes. Yeah, yeah. And again, if we have a link that people can go to request that very easily.
That's on our website. All these agents, which I talked about, people call it use case. Some calls them agent. It's agentic way. Some people call it user story, but those things are available, and you know, this is how we are doing it.
Do you have any interesting engagements where you're seeing customers with multiple operating systems from like Sonic and some vendor proprietary operating system, both putting info in that data lake and you operating on it?
Yes. So we have the way it works is pretty simple, right? I mean, you basically start from either putting the AI from top.
Sure.
And you don't care about what is the network operating system. So all of our AI engagements right now are that way because, you know, one variable at a time, you want to put AI first and then talk about NOS and everything.
Sure.
So all the AI engagements are like that because when customer wants to put AI, that itself is a new technology.
Right.
Right. You don't want to ask them that, hey, let's change your network operating system and your network also. Right. So you just go with AI and that's what it is. So all of those engagements are multi-NOS.
Right. Well, so that's great. And I'm sure people are going to want to learn more about that.
Yeah.
I think there's a very interesting future where, you know, we used to not trust routing protocols.
Yeah.
Right. But eventually we put automatic mechanisms in for neighbor discovery and flooding of information, et cetera.
Yeah.
And we're still at the stage where we're learning to trust AI based techniques, but we'll get there. You know, like per your comment, I just had an extended test drive borrowing my son-in-law's fully electric Kia, the first car I ever drove with lane assist, and I learned to trust it very quickly. Like I was very skeptical, but we did not coordinate about this story, but like that was very concrete for me. Yeah. And I think you're going to see network operators go through the same set of steps.
Yeah.
Yep. So you did mention as we were prepping, you've seen some interesting troubleshooting cases.
Yeah.
I believe Sonic focused. Do you want to, as we wind this down, like what are some of the interesting cases you've seen that you've had to get involved with resolution?
So this particular one case comes in the mind, which kind of kept us up at the night with one of our customer. The switches were popping, one after the other.
Right.
Right. And we were like looking at all the logs and everything. Nothing was making sense. What's happening? And what was happening actually, that I2C bus, which actually takes care of the fan and, the temperature,
all the simple stuff, but it's got to work,
The platform, you see, it goes back to the same point.
Sure.
Nothing to do with Sonic. It's basically the platform, and that I2C was giving a message that the fan is on, but fan was not on. So temperature and, the temperature readings were also, because that I2C bus was giving the fault temperature reading also.
Right.
So it took a data center technician go to data center because we kind of said that, look, this something is not right here.
Right.
Can you please physically check the switch? What is happening there? And what we looked at it is that, the fan was not working. So, of course, the temperature was going up and so it will restart. When it will restart, temperature goes up, it will again shut down. Right. And the fix was pretty simple, actually. And this is where the power of Sonic comes in. It was just a script which was run to fix the I2C problem. You didn't have to change the whole operating system. That's the power of Sonic.
Right.
Right. It's just one script. It was just a register setting in I2C. And you can actually do that. I mean, think of it, changing that kind of operating system upgrade for this one across cold data center versus you just, run a script and you fix the issue.
You patch the issue. Yep. Yep.
So that's true.
Yeah. The hot fix issue has been a pain for network operators and TAC engineers for a very long time.
Yes.
So, well, we'll end on the fun question. So in your days when you actually did have to do stuff in the middle of the night on maintenance windows or other stress situations, a lot of people had music going for those maintenance windows. What's your go-to music for those activities when you've got to stay awake in the middle of the night?
Well, look, I mean, I was born in 80s. So actually, my favorite singers are the ones which basically aligned with that. So I love to listen to Linkin Park and Nickelback.
Sure.
Right. And I love to hear them at a very high volume. That's the secret, by the way.
I can picture it. Yeah. I can picture it right
and,
now.
And that kind of helps you just reduce all the noise around you. And you basically just end up focusing on the right thing. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's basically the people who are of my age bracket will probably understand that.
Got it. Got it. We had some other music discussion before the podcast, too. I won't steal your thunder on that. Well, look, these are two huge areas, open networking and what's happening with AI for networking, that I think are critical for any modern network engineer to be well-versed in. And it's not next year. It's now.
Yes.
Right? So are there any, like, critical nuggets that, like, if you would think, you know, network operators really need to go understand and investigate in any of the things you talked about today? Like, what's, if you had to say one thing before we close, what would it be?
So look, I'll just say that the risk of you know, staying at the status quo was very less 10 years back. But the risk of staying at status quo in today's world, where things are changing every week, is very, very high.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not asking and saying that you should change your whole thing tomorrow, but at least, you know, try. And it's not just the network, it's also the AI, the data, the whole things which are changing. And because it will get to you. And it's your decision that you embrace it or it basically shows up on your door unannounced. So that's what I would say. Things are changing pretty fast. So, you know, just start with it. That's what it is.
I totally agree with you. That's very highly aligned with what we're trying to do with Total Network Operations and the next generation network engineer. We're not in a static environment. You need to keep learning.
Yeah.
You've just provided some really good opportunities for network engineers to continue to learn. So Vishal, thank you for coming on today. Where would you like folks to find you? Where would you like to point people if they want more information?
My first name, @IvisNetworks.com. Vishal @IvisNetworks. Drop me an email or, you know, just fill up a form. We are a startup. We end up seeing, you know, we have a lot more good granularity. So chances are you will reach to me pretty fast.
Very good. Well, people will take you up on that. So at least I will. But thanks so much for coming on Total Network Operations today. Open networking is critical. AI for networking is critical. You've helped us get a great start here. For the rest, thank you all for tuning in to Total Network Operations. We'd love your feedback. We also have some interesting things to announce later this year. Stay tuned for some exciting developments from the TNOps team. If you're someone with important things to say about NetOps or you want to hear what's coming, you can contact me via DM on LinkedIn or send us a follow-up at packetpushers.net/follow-up or go to tnops.com and fill out the contact form. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on TNOps.